Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, July 15th. I'm Ray Graff, in for Alan Shartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, announcing the expansion of its cardiovascular and interventional suite, investing in the health care of the Saratoga community, Saratoga Hospital, an affiliate of Albany Med. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology. He is here in the studio to answer your questions about colon cancer. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Dr. Indir Lal and your calls coming up on Medical Monday, right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday, and today Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us to discuss colon cancer. Dr. Lal is a board-certified medical oncologist and a hematologist practicing in Amsterdam. He completed his residency at the Weill Medical College of Cornell University and went on to a fellowship at the University of Vermont Medical Center. To be a part of today's conversation, all you have to do is give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. 2551. Dr. Indir Lal, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very nice to have you here. The New York Oncology Hematology in Amsterdam, where you practice, is it covers a wide range of cancers. Is colon cancer the only thing you do over there?
There are a variety of cases that we see, but majority, there is a significant population of the patients who present to us with colon cancer, and they present at various stages for the management. So yes, we have a significant percentage of those patients that come with colon cancer in our Amsterdam Cancer Center area.
Anecdotally, are you seeing an increase in the numbers of colon cancer patients?
That's hard to say, but if you look at the data over the course of last several years, we have noticed that the more and more younger patients are getting diagnosed with colon cancer. Colon cancer used to be the age for patients who are more than 50 years of the age, but because of the uptick in the incidence of the colon cancer in younger populations, the American Cancer Society changed their recommendations last year to start the screening colonoscopy at a younger age of 45 years.
Now, yes. I know this is difficult for you to answer, but in your opinion, is the drop in age, can we pinpoint a cause as better screening, or is there something in our environment or in our diets that is causing younger and younger people to get this?
Well, we exactly do not know why we are seeing increase in the incidence of colon cancer in younger patients, but what we know is that the incidence correlates very well with the rising incidence of obesity in the United States population. So this is one of the areas of the interest, that obesity problems being addressed. Two is that there are research going on to find out if there are any molecular characteristics or the change in the microbiome of the colon area that predisposes the patients to be affected by colon cancer at a younger age. But that research is ongoing. For now, because of the fact that the cancer, we are focusing on more of prevention and early detection. That's why the American Cancer Society changed their recommendations to have a screening colonoscopy done at slightly younger age than 50 years.
What are the prevention strategies, the state of the art?
Generally speaking, if I say patients who, you have to find out what are the risk factors that predisposed somebody to colon cancer, the obesity being one, diets which are high in the red meat and low in the fiber, genetic links, having past history of family members being affected by cancer. These are some of the common risk factors that predispose us to the colon cancer, and we should work on towards the modification. While the genetic factors cannot be modified to some degree, but starting the screening at early age can lead to the early detection and better cure.
And early detection really is the key, right?
Early detection is the key while we can try to reduce the incidence of the cancers.
Our number here on Medical Monday is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Indira Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us today to discuss colon cancer. The stages of colon cancer. Stage one is what you're trying to catch early, right?
Yes.
Yes. And take us to stage two and three.
So when you have regional lymph node involvement or more deeper penetration of the tissue, we call them as a stage two or three. You generally think about the cancer as locally advanced and metastatic one. So two and three are kind of locally advanced form of the colon cancer. That's where we try to catch the patients as early as a stage one, but obviously the lower the number, the better the prognosis is.
Lumping stage one, two, and three together, what is the survival rate for colon cancer?
So if we say early stage colon cancer, their five-year survival rate can be greater than 75%, while when we head towards the stage four colon cancer, your median survival kind of drops down to average of 2 years. Mm. So that's a significant difference between the survival.
All right, doctor, we will jump on the phones now at 800-348-2551. We begin with Fred in Clifton Park. Fred.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for taking the call. I am 70 years old. My paternal grandfather had colon cancer, and so did my father. I get a colonoscopy every 3 years. I do not eat a lot of red meat. I try and eat a high-fiber diet, and I was told to supplement that with Metamucil. And I usually have it every morning, and I read somewhere that you can have it two or three times a day. I'm wondering if there's any benefit from using it more frequently.
In my opinion, thank you so much for calling, Fred, anyway. But in my opinion, two to three times having supplemental fiber in your diet is a reasonable plan. You have done exactly right in cutting down on the red meat and increasing the fiber intake. But at the same time, you should have more physical activity and continue with your regular screening colonoscopy. I probably would say that the way you are doing right now is sufficient. Intensifying this further probably will not provide any significant additional benefit to the reducing the incidence of the cancer. But certainly adding controlling other factors, such as keeping yourself physically active and keeping up to date on your screening colonoscopy, are the two ways to go.
Okay, so the increase in the use of Metamucil was not of significant benefit then?
No, I would probably just keep it as it is right now.
All right, Fred, thank you for the call. Why is red meat a problem, doctor?
Red meat, when we do some red meat cooking, turns into the chemical compounds that are known to be carcinogenic to our body. Exact details can be highly variable, but in general, patients who are having a lot of pork and similar products, and if they cook it at a very high heat, it generates the toxic compounds that turns the DNA into the carcinogenic situation, leading to the cancer development.
Now, people have been eating meat for a long, long time, and it's very difficult, I would assume, to do medical history and figure out the cancer rates of, say, 600-700 years ago. But I would assume that colon cancer was an issue back hundreds of years ago because people ate a lot of meat.
Probably it was there. It's just we become more aware of the situation, the increase in the screening and diagnostic tests, as well as the findings from the pathology have led us to kind of ability to detect the cancer more and diagnose it more early, as well as kind of offer the treatment at various stages, dividing into different categories.
Dr. Indira Lal is here today from New York Oncology Hematology. The number is 800-348-2551 on this Medical Monday. Let's grab another call or two before the first break. Susie in Northampton. Susie, you're on.
Hi. Sorry for the hesitation. I was wondering, when you talk about stage one, I had precancerous polyps 6 years ago. And they took them out right then and there. I assume that's stage one.
Mm-hmm. Is that true? Is that stage one?
The polyps are generally not called the stage one unless they have cancerous changes seen on the pathology report. So you
right,
can
it
have
was precancerous.
Yeah. So if you have to divide the polyps, you can have adenomatous polyps, which have resemble like a normal glands of the body, and they can increase the risk of cancer. But until and unless they have cells inside it, which look like cancerous cells, we don't call them cancer itself. Polyps, when they are removed, they are analyzed by the pathologist, and they tell us exactly how much is the risk of this probably transformation over the course of next few years to the real cancer form.
Okay, thank you for that. And then question, After that, I had a colonoscopy 4 years later, and it was clean, and I am scheduled for the next one when I will be 75 plus.
Mm-hmm.
75. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, so the second one after they found those polyps was clean, I have diverticulitis, and I wondered about the risk benefit. In other words, my inclination is not to have any more colonoscopies.
I would probably have to kind of say that your gastroenterologist has to review the polyps pathology exactly, but in general, the patients who are younger tend to have more aggressive form of the cancer compared to elderly population. But at the same time, once you are being diagnosed with having a polyps, your risk of cancer is higher compared to the general population who does not have history of polyps. As far as the diverticulitis is concerned, we generally recommend patients who have episode of diverticulitis to undergo colonoscopy 6 to 8 weeks after their recovery to find out there is no obstructing mass that predispose the patient to diverticulitis, in fact. So diverticulitis in itself is not a contraindication to undergo colonoscopy. It can be done safely. And if you are remaining concerned about the possibility of diverticulitis getting worse, there are alternative forms of screening, such as CT colonography, which can be done to kind of find out if there is any solid lesion within the colon. But then if they detect something on that test, colonoscopy will still be warranted. So I would encourage that not to discontinue your colonoscopy because of history of diverticulitis, but to discuss this with your gastroenterologist to find out safe alternatives if you remain concerned.
Dr. Indir Lal is our guest today. It's Medical Monday, and we talk colon cancer on the program. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll take a break and be right back. Welcome back to Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok today. Our number is 800-348-2551. We talk colon cancer today with Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology. And let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Why is it not possible for tests such as Cologuard to separate DNA from gross blood? Even a small amount of gross blood may cause a false positive.
Okay, so I don't know if you got that, doctor, but why is it possible for tests like Cologuard, I guess, which is, I think most of us know what it is. You send stuff away in a box. And why is it not possible to separate DNA from gross blood?
Means the peripheral blood?
Jim?
Jim, are you talking about getting a DNA from the peripheral blood versus the stool?
If you have gross blood mixed in with the stool, a lot of times cause a false positive on the Cologuard.
Okay. I think we are looking for two things. One, we are looking for the colon cancer, which is ulcerated, to shed the blood into the stool, and that's where you pick up your Cologuard test. Secondly, you're looking for genetic changes within that DNA to find out. If you had a simple bleeding from, say, hemorrhoids, and you got the DNA out from that, that will not have genetic changes that you're looking for. So Cologuard picks up those genetic changes from the blood. As far as the gross blood is concerned, if it's coming from the itself cancer area. It can be detected in the blood. There must be some laboratories doing that, but I'm not aware of why we cannot exactly just pick up the stool and not do a Cologuard test. You probably want to know the genetic change, and you want to make sure that it is coming from the cancer itself. So that's where the Cologuard works.
Okay. Well, Jim, thanks for that one. This email came in from Michael. Could the doctor please comment on the risks of a low-fiber, high animal protein diet versus a high-fiber diet centered around plants? And that's from Michael.
Can I repeat the question?
Sure. This is not a game show, so I'm happy to repeat the question. Could the doctor please comment on the risks of a low-fiber, high animal protein diet versus a higher fiber diet centered around plants?
So if we look at the data from our surveillance studies in the past, we find out that patients who have consumed, are the general population who have consumed high plant-based diet and high fiber diet and low animal protein diet, they tend to have a lower risk of colorectal cancer compared the other way around. So we go by what incidence we have seen so far, and we extrapolate that to the general population. That is probably one of the factors that reduces the incidence of colon cancer.
Dr. Indira Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us today. We talk colon cancer on this Medical Monday. The number, 800-348-2551. Alex in Saratoga. Alex, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm asking about physical activity, the role of physical activity in reducing the risk of colon cancer. Doctors frequently will prescribe anti-cancer drugs and treatments when cancer is identified, diagnosed. But as far as a more preventative approach and encouraging potential patients to pursue more active lifestyles, is it possible, as though is it covered by insurance, would it be possible to write prescriptions essentially for a gym membership or a yoga studio membership to make that a more financially viable option for many patients who may not otherwise feel that they have the means to do that in an organized way?
Well, I'm exactly not aware whether how each insurance plan works for it, but prescribing, writing a prescription for a gym membership or kind of encouraging physical activity is something we can always do for the patients if it is something offered by their insurance plan. It goes more by the type of insurance plan they have versus what we can say yes or no.
Okay.
For my management perspective, I would always encourage them to have more physical activity because it improves not only the survival after the cancer diagnosis, but it also reduces the chance of developing the cancer. So yes, physical activity is encouraged. Depending upon the insurance plan, we will be happy to work with our patients to kind of prescribe anything that's approved by their plan.
Dr. Indira Lal is our guest today. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok. The topic today is colon cancer, and let's go to line three. And Ann in Richfield Springs. Ann, you're on. Oh, you got to turn it down. Can you turn that radio down just a wee bit there, Ann?
Oh, my radio's not on. I'm speaking on my cell phone. Does that sound all right?
Now you're fine. You're beautiful sounding. Go ahead.
Okay. Great. So my grandfather died of colon cancer, so I'm a risk. And I had my first colonoscopy. She found one polyp and asked me to come back in 3 years. So I came back somewhere between 3 and 4 years. The next doc found 4 polyps and told me to come back in 10 years, which was a little bit strange. But I wound up actually having anal cancer, which I realized is different cells. And so I don't think there's a relationship between the squamous cell carcinoma and the adeno that's further up in the colon. But I wanted to know about that, and I also wanted to know like how soon I should have another colonoscopy following cancer treatment, which ended in April. I caught it very, very early. I'm expected to have 100% cure rate, and I wanted to know also if anal cancer increases colon cancer risk. I can't imagine that it does. Mm-hmm. And then I also have sons who I'm concerned about, the genetic their genetic predisposition.
Yeah. So generally,
that's a lot of questions. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That was great. Well done.
So to answer the first questions, you are right. The squamous cell carcinoma of the anus and the adenocarcinoma of the colon origin, which accounts for 96% of the colon cancers, has a different profile and different treatment strategies and different cure rate. So you are right on the path that you got it at early stage, and we see almost 100% cure rate in your situation. The further colonoscopies are actually determined by the patient's prior history. So family history along with the polyps and type and the number of the polyps along with the size of the polyps help the gastroenterologist to determine the frequency of the colonoscopy. The colonoscopy after the anal cancer is generally not recommended for the surveillance purpose of anal squamous cell carcinoma because you got it at early stage, and during that early stage, you require a proctoscopy, which is done by a surgeon or a gastroenterologist locally in the office. Colonoscopy for anal cancer itself is not recommended. General screening colonoscopies are determined by the familial risk and number of polyps that you have in the past. So, and then the connection, the squamous cell carcinoma of the anal cancer is different than the adeno of the squamous of the anus is different than your adeno of the colon cancer. So, yes, you are right on the path. So, continue to follow with your gastroenterologist to discuss the frequency of why there is a discrepancy between the frequency recommendations of colonoscopy.
Yeah, and one of the polyps was suspicious. The others were benign, but one, I can't remember the type. But so I was just wondering why this guy, after finding four, told me to come back in 10 years. It's just, he was a different doc. And anyway, so I know more questions.
Yeah, it's probably has to kind of deal with the exact details of the pathology report. You can get them, and we can always review it if you want us to be involved in your care.
Okay, and thank you so much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's a Medical Monday. Dr. Indira Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us. Let's for a minute here talk about family and the genetic risk. What is the danger if someone, say your grandfather, has had colon cancer? That's a red flag, to be sure. What percentage of grandpa's descendants will come down with colon cancer?
So if we look at the hereditary colon cancer, and most common type we see is the Lynch syndrome. And out of all the colon cancer incidents, approximately 2 to 4% of the population will have Lynch syndrome.
What is Lynch syndrome?
The Lynch syndrome is a hereditary disorder whereby you have a defect in mismatched repair proteins that lead to the genetic instability and development of cancer at early age.
Of any type?
Of the adenocarcinoma of the colon.
Okay, so
predominantly.
Is there a difference in the likelihood of genetic passing on of cancer based on the type of cancer? Is it or is it pretty much uniform?
So no, if you have some person, anyone in the family member, any family member who is affected at younger age and has been diagnosed with mismatch repair deficiency, the first degree relatives need to be screened at early stage because then they have a higher risk of developing cancer subsequently. So they develop aggressive cancer, they develop at younger age, they predominantly have right-sided tumors, and they tend to behave worse.
Right-sided tumor. Is there a difference in treatment between left and right side?
If we look at the data, there was a trial done a few years ago to compare the best possible combination treatment for patients with advanced stage colon cancer. Surprisingly, the trial did not find difference between the treatment paradigms of the two different drugs, but they discovered that the right-sided colon cancer tend to behave worse compared to the left-sided.
Do we know why?
It was not clearly known why, but when they dissected down the treatment options, the right-sided patients did even worse if they were offered a specific drug which inhibits the particular genetic pathway called EGFR. So nowadays, when the patient comes to my office, and it presents with me advanced stage or stage 4 colon cancer, then I try to say, is it a right-sided tumor that I am dealing with or a left-sided tumor I am dealing with? And I develop my treatment plan accordingly.
This is fascinating. So does anyone have a theory as to why this is the case?
They are trying to look at the molecular markers again to find out why this is different. We know some of the markers are different, but they do not completely explain the situation right now.
Our guest today is Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology. It's Medical Monday, colon cancer today on the program. The number is 800-348-2551. Carolyn in Red Hook. Carolyn, you're on.
Hi. I had heard about, for a while, what I think is a blood test that people use sometimes before or instead of to help determine the probabilities of colon cancer as opposed to colonoscopy. That didn't come out quite right, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this? Do you have an opinion on it?
Yes, there is a test that can be done from the blood to find out the risk of colon cancer or the incidence of colon cancer. But that test, unfortunately...
The risk or the incidence?
The incidence. The only problem with that test is that it has a significantly lower sensitivity of detection. And then anything that you get positive on the test has to be confirmed with the biopsy, which involves the colonoscopy. So that is the two main reasons that we don't use that test more often because of...
It's a bit of a waste, ending up having
yes.
to do two things.
Yes.
Will you get false positives often with the blood test?
Generally not. It has a high specificity, but very low sensitivity that makes it kind of missing many cancer diagnoses.
Why can't the sensitivity be increased?
It probably has to... I'm not sure about the exact details, but it kind of depends upon what stage the cancer is. If it's a early stage, that's what the goal of the screening test is. That so you do not see much changes out in the blood. You'll see more changes locally. Rather than systemically.
All right, Carolyn, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday today, colon cancer today, with Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology. Let's go to Sue in Saratoga. Sue.
Hi, good afternoon, doctor.
Hi.
This is such a great show. My mom passed away from right-sided colon cancer, so that was a fascinating tip. But my question has nothing to do with that. I'm wondering if you are an advocate of probiotics to enhance the microbiome to prevent colon cancer. Do you have any research behind the recommendations that are going on? And there's so many varieties out there. How do you know which one really has the cultures that you need? I'll hold on and listen to your reply.
Yeah, this is really interesting question. The probiotics have been advocated by many of the gastroenterologists and many oncologists. But if we look at the recommendations from our American Cancer Society, they do not specifically suggest that the probiotics should be used as the way to reduce the incidence. But there is a new data coming out that is kind of similar to probiotics, that those people who consumed more yogurt were noted to have lower incidence of colon cancer. So in some way, it will be more clear in the near future. But if you go with the simple recommendations, I would say, yes, have more yogurt. That's what I do for myself.
Okay, helpful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sue. We appreciate the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us on this Medical Monday. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop, Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok. Colon cancer, the topic today. And Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us. The number is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. What's the state of the art in treatment these days?
when we see anybody with the advanced stage colorectal cancer, that's where the landscape of the treatment is changing. So we have been able to divide the tumors into the right-sided and left-sided tumors. We try to identify specific genetic mutations to see if the treatment needs to be further intensified. And we collect the tumor for the finding out if there is any genomic instability within those cancer cells.
If there is, what do you do?
So if there are patients who have microsatellite instable tumor, those who have a significant degree of genetic change within their tumor itself, they tend to respond nicely to the immunotherapeutic drugs. We have a recent improvement or trials that are done to find out the role of these immunotherapeutic agents, and two of the most commonly used immunotherapeutic drugs change the checkpoint inhibitors. In simple, checkpoint inhibitors are the switches that are used by the immune system to turn off the immune system and protect the body from over damage. Some of those switches can be used by the cancer cells to hide from the immune system, and that provide them an opportunity to grow. So in different type of tumors, we combined various checkpoint inhibitors to let those switches be on, and the immune system recognizes the cancer cells and destroys them. We have seen that patients who have tried those checkpoint inhibitors can have response rates as high as 60% with a combination of the drugs, compared to the past when they did not respond very well to the simple cytotoxic chemotherapeutic drugs.
What are the side effects?
The commonly reported side effects involve the overactivation of the immune system, although any part of the body can be affected, but most commonly reported side effects involves the lungs, such as inflammation causing pneumonitis, colon causing colitis, or liver causing hepatitis, or endocrine dysfunction, such as leading to the dysfunction of the thyroid gland, hypothyroidism, and similar side effects. But most of the patients develop complications only in one or two systems rather than having immune system attacking all of the cells of the body at the same time.
Our number here on Medical Monday is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Indir Lal is here talking colon cancer today, and Rachel in Leverett, Massachusetts is next. Rachel.
Hey, Ray. Thank you for taking my call, and thanks for having this doctor on. Sounds great.
Thank you.
My question is really simple. I'm curious to know what the combination, or the connection, rather, between irritable bowel syndrome and colon cancer is. In other words, if people who suffer from IBS, and I'm interested to know whether there's a difference between IBS and diarrhea variant and IBS constipation variant, and how those might be related to increased possibility of getting colon cancer.
Generally, I am not aware of the any functional bowel disorder such as irritable bowel syndrome leading to the increased incidence of colon cancer. We have known that the inflammatory bowel disease, which is a totally different type of situation, that does lead to the increased risk of colon cancer in itself. If we have to divide, the people who have constipation generally tend to have more risk of colon cancer, but not the irritable bowel syndrome that I am aware of.
Great. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Rachel, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us today. Let's talk about mindset, patient's mindset. I've been told, and this is anecdotal, I've not had, thankfully, had to go through any cancer therapy, but that a positive outlook is important.
It is very important, because you make, whenever you are being diagnosed with the cancer, it produces a lot of stress on the body. It leads to the, if we say when we exercise, we have hormones released that elevate our mood. When we get a cancer diagnosis, you go into a phase of depression.
Yeah.
So when your outlook towards is negative, then you start making decisions that are affecting your survival chances.
Yeah.
Some of the patients, because of the negative outlook towards the chemotherapy regimen, has tried herbal supplements, and we have seen that they have not done well. And there are a lot of myths about the cancer care with the herbal medicines and all those things have kind of have been happening because of this negative outlook and negative attitude.
So you have no confidence at all in herbal medicines?
There are few things that can be helpful, but once you have been diagnosed with certain stage without having a proven data, it is hard to recommend that you should not undergo regular cancer-directed therapy and just try herbal supplement situation.
Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok today, and Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology is our guest. You think in your lifetime, you're a fairly young man, cure for cancer?
We are making significant stride. There are situations which are curable. Say, if we have to talk about, but it goes from tumor to tumor, it's different. If we have patient with a lymphoma, they can be cured. If we have patients with early stage breast cancer, they can be cured. If we have patients with early stage colon cancer, such as stage 1, stage 2, or even some of the low risk stage 3, they can be cured.
Well, and you mentioned turning off, and I forget exactly how you said it, but turning off some of the components, switching them off. Will there be a master switch someday that science discovers and you throw that switch and you kill the cancer?
So we do have an extensive amount of research going on allowing the body or the immune system to recognize the cancer cells and mm-hmm. cure the patients. And we have seen dramatic responses. Even at the New York Oncology and Hematology, we are trying to bring those immune mediated mechanism or treatment options to our patients. One of those options, such as we are recently trying to develop, is the incorporation of CAR T cell therapy, where we activate the patient's T cells, which are one of the components of the immune cells, to train them, and then they attack the cancer cells in the patient's body.
How do you train a T cell?
We combine a chimeric antigen receptor. We put we transfer a vector into the signal that produces a signal within the immune cells, and they can go attach and recognize the cancer cells and activates them and leads to the destruction. So this kind of technology are the treatment option is coming into the real world, and we have seen high cure rates with that. And while this is more done in the blood-related situations, this is also now being explored for the patients who have solid tumors, such as lung cancer. So we are trying to provide that world-class care close to their home, and we are making significant progress.
So you're optimistic.
I am optimistic. So the reason I joined oncology is the two main reasons. One is the science behind this field, and two, the relationship that you develop with your patients. So those are the two factors that attracted me to the oncology field.
Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us today, and the number is 800-348-2551. Nancy in Greenwich, New York. Nancy, you're on.
Hi, I have a question for the doctor about a syndrome, a family syndrome, called Muir-Torre syndrome. It's a subset of Lynch syndrome. And my question is, what are any preventative measures that family members can take regarding avoiding getting cancer if you've been identified through genetic testing to have this syndrome? And are there any other medical updates regarding Muir-Torre syndrome? And I'll hang up to listen to the reply.
All right, please. Nancy, thank you.
I'm not aware of any new updates as far as the syndrome is concerned, but I would say that while any type of cancer development requires a combination of genetic and environmental factors to lead to the cancer development, so genetic factors we cannot modify, but we can obviously screen, and your family obviously, I suspect that must be going through genetic counseling. That's the first step to be done.
What is genetic counseling?
The genetic counseling involves a visit with a genetic specialist where they get the details of the family history and advise the family members at what age they should undergo a screening procedure, what are the prophylactic treatment options available, such as surgery, to reduce the incidence of that cancer in particular family. Once that genetic counseling is completed, then the modification of the environmental factors will be the most important that I will do, is to kind of keep myself physically active, use low red meat diet and high plant-based and fiber diet, and exercise regularly, and based upon the exact risk involved, undergo the regular screening colonoscopy as determined by the risk of development of disease.
Our number here on Medical Monday is 800-348-2551. Dr. Indir Lal is our guest. Chris in Red Hook is on. Chris.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My question is in two parts. One is a perianal wart a type of HPV virus? And is there any correlation between HPV virus and colon cancer?
This is two different situations. With the anal warts and the HPV, we see the more risk of the anal squamous cell carcinoma, which is a different type of cancer, than the colon cancer, which is mostly an adenocarcinoma. So I would say that's two. With the warts, you will probably be more at the, or the HPV will be more at the risk of the anal squamous cell rather than colon itself.
So it remains isolated in
yes.
the rectal anal region?
I would say probably in the anal region. The rectum has almost similar morphology in upper portion of the rectum, has similar characteristics as to the colon, so it's mostly in the anal area.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Chris. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Indir Lal of New York Oncology Hematology joins us. How many patients a week do you see?
Personally, I would say close to 75 to 85.
It's a lot. It's a lot of cancer. Let's go back to the phones here. And Gabe in Charlemont. Gabe, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just calling because I've been experiencing some serious spastic colon in the past, and I found that the best way for me to fix it is by keeping my back straight. I'm just wondering if there's a better way to fix that. Is it my diet that's causing that?
That's really not his line of work. You can go ahead and give it a shot, Doc.
I probably will. this is...
We're talking to an oncologist here, though, yeah. Gabe. You know that, right?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. If you have an answer...
Talking about, you know, my stomach hurts a lot, and my, I don't know, it just seems like a poop problem.
Ah, well...
Yeah,
right.
I'd probably say you have to discuss with a gastroenterologist.
Okay. That's a good start. Yeah, thanks for that one. All right, the number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Indir Lal is our guest in the waning moments here. Anything you want to tell us, you want to educate us about?
I would always say that the cancer, we always have to focus on, one, preventing the cancer and then early detection. Preventing the cancer involves reducing the risk factors. And we already know a lot about the risk factors involved with the development of colon cancer or any other cancers. Staying away from smoking, excessive heavy alcohol use, physical inactivity, obesity, a diet which is high in the red meat and low in the plant-based diet, all these things predispose us to the development of cancer. So we should all try to stay away from these habits, as well as if you are diagnosed with any type of cancer, spread the education. Education is important.
What do you mean?
Means one of my patients who was diagnosed with a colon cancer, he will stop by whenever he went to the restaurant. He will, if he sees somebody of his age, he will go and ask him, "Did you have get your screening colonoscopy done?"
Okay.
That kind of triggered, it provided them an education how important screening colonoscopy is, because he got diagnosed at latest stage and he wanted to everybody around him to get a screening colonoscopy done. So share your stories, try to educate the people around you and encourage them to undergo screening procedures as determined by their physicians, so that this incidence can go down and we can pick up the cases at early stage and increase the chances of cure.
Let's go back to the phones. Tyler in Vermont. Tyler, you're on.
Hey, I just had a question. I've got a colonoscopy exam coming up, and I was just wondering about the steps I needed to take in order to prepare myself for it.
Okay, now that's for a gastroenterologist. Okay, but if you want to take a stab at it.
So generally speaking, for colonoscopy, you know, this is a kind of camera test you're trying to do, and good visualization is very important. So they will ask you to have a clear liquid diet for a day before the procedure. They drink a liquid overnight to clean your colon completely so that they can take good pictures of the colon.
What liquid would you recommend? Like, if you had to recommend kind of liquid to drink?
Well, not Mountain Dew, all right?
Not Mountain Dew?
No.
Most likely recommended by the gastroenterologist is the Go Lightly. That's kind of hard preparation, but test itself takes only 15 to 20 minutes. So if you can go through the preparation, they can take good pictures and they can kind of say, okay, you don't need anything done for next 10 years.
All right. Hey, Tyler, thanks and good luck with that. The number here in the waning moments of the program, 800-348-2551. Dr. Indira Lal of New York Oncology Hematology is here. You see, you get all kinds of questions on this program. You're having fun?
Yeah.
You'll never come back. Isn't that correct?
I would be happy to come back anytime.
Right. Philosophical question for you. Now, you've devoted your extensive education to the study of cancer and your treatment. Your practice is in treatment. They cure cancer and nobody has cancer again. You're out of business. What do you do?
I will be super happy.
Yeah? Will you spend a lot more time at home?
Yeah. I mean, it's our goal is to cure everybody. So it's one step at a time. So we are making progress. If I did not have a job, but at least I can say proudly that I cured patients and I made them enjoy their life with their family.
Do you ever get depressed? You see a lot of sick people.
I don't get depressed, but it does sometimes bring tears to my eyes. I would not call it depression, but it's kind of the helplessness situation where you really desperately want somebody to be pain-free and enjoy their life and have... it's kind of difficult to say, but it's not exactly depression, but helplessness kind of makes me upset sometimes that I don't have treatment option for them at some stage.
You know, in the news world, you have to have sort of a firewall, and you see so much horrible stuff that when you leave work, you have to leave it behind. I assume you also have to leave all the horrors that you see behind as well when you go home.
No, I don't know. I'm different. So I keep thinking about my patients. Sometimes if I see a case worsening or not making positive progress, I don't, even during my weekends or days off, I keep thinking about that case. I keep exploring the further treatment options for them. So I'm really not out of my patient's zone. So I do have moments where I will try to make myself fresh to come back with the fresh ideas. But I still keep thinking about my cases.
You see, that's why you are a highly paid doctor and we are working in broadcasting. That's the difference right there. All right, very quickly, only have about 30 seconds. Adi, you're on.
Yeah, I just want to ask the doctor, how was the difference between the treatment for a stage 3, rectal cancer? Is it, the best one is to go through chemo for for 4 months and then, do the surgery.
All right, we're almost out of time here. So I think he gets the point. What's the best treatment?
So the best treatment, it's kind of combination of treatment that is being offered with the surgery, chemo radiation, and chemotherapy, combining in sequence that's determined by your treating oncologist.
Well, that is where we will have to leave it. Thank you very much, Dr. Indira Lal of New York Oncology Hematology, for joining us today. Support comes from Gomez Neurology, Albany, New York. Medical neurologist offering scrambler pain therapy, an FDA-cleared non-invasive and non-drug pain relief therapy, GomezNeurology.com for information. Once again, thank you for joining us for Medical Monday. Our engineer, Zach Malloy. Phones answered by Jackie Orchard. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, Richard P. Guthrie returns to field your birding questions. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.